Good afternoon and welcome to Saturday with Cormac O'Hara. Today, our politicians listen up. We get solutions from listeners and experts implementable in Tuesday's budget to make our community a better place to live. Join us for the live call-in in a moment. Make your own suggestion now at 51551. First News, read by Susan Jackson. Thank you very much indeed, Susan. Levy the Cuckoo Funds is Martin and Bray, 51551. And we haven't even got out of the traps or the nest, Martin. Thank you very much indeed. Today is your day to come up with suggestions and solutions to make Ireland a better place to live. And these ideas should cost very little, but they could cost something. It's going to be introduced in the budget. Not your ideas, maybe, but the budget will be introduced and announced on Tuesday. We have a panel of politicians to grapple with some of your ideas, and they are Peter Burke, Fine Gael TD for Longford West Meath and member of the Eireachtas Finance Committee, Dara O'Brien, a Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin Fingal and spokesperson on housing, Pierce Doherty is a Sinn Féin TD for Donegal and spokesperson on finance, and Ruth Coppinger is a Solidarity TD for Dublin West and a member of the Eireachtas Transport Committee. 51551, we have solutions, we think, on a range of topics, burning issues for an awful lot of people, how to buy your family home, how to make the climate situation a lot better in this country. We have ideas on wealth taxes and so on. But let's dive straight in. Our first solution or suggestion comes from Frances Byrne, who's Director of Policy and Advocacy and Campaigning with Early Childhood Ireland. Welcome to the programme, Frances. What's your suggestion?
Thank you, Cormac. In Budget 2020, Early Childhood Ireland is calling on government to create a single dedicated childcare agency. This would serve as a one-stop shop for parents, providing all the information families need, including up-to-the-minute inspection reports. It would also allow for a rapid intervention team to take immediate remedial action when necessary. Currently, childcare providers, including Early Childhood Ireland's members all over Ireland, must interact with 7 different agencies and government departments. This fragmented approach is just not fit for purpose, and it's certainly not in the best interests of children and their families.
Okay, and that's, you're saying it's not the case at the moment. Let me put that to Peter Burke of Fine Gael. It seems so simple in a way. If you're dealing with childcare, early childhood education, a one-stop shop, why not?
It's a fair point, and indeed RTÉ have done their work in terms of RTÉ Investigates to show the concerns that have been raised in the past. But I would point out, over the last 4 years, there's been a 117% increase in investment in childcare. And now we're at a stage whereby almost 200,000 children are benefiting from early intervention and childcare schemes. So we have our second free preschool year, which our children are benefiting from. You have the universal child subsidy of over €1,000 per year. You have a targeted subsidy as well for children between 6 months.
OK, but hang on, I'll stop you there, because in a way, that's not your point, Frances, is it? You're saying that all of these different creches and so on, early childhood centres, they have to deal with so many different agencies. Do you want to list them out there? If you're a creche operating in Ireland today, you'll have to deal with 7 agencies. Do you have them to hand?
I do, of course.
Belt away.
Certainly, you have to deal with 2 inspectorates, one in the Department of Education and Skills, one that's based in Tusla. You have to deal with a third, Pubble, an agency which deals with the financial aspects of the programmes, as well as all attendance and funding on a day-to-day basis in creches. There's also Better Start, which deals with quality and mentoring for educators. There are a couple of different policy units, a compliance unit, and then there are city and county childcare committees.
And on and on it goes.
Should there be a one-stop? Indeed, if you're a creche that prepares food every day for children, you also have an additional inspection regime.
Okay, Ruth Coppinger, one-stop shop.
I would support that, and actually I've been dealing with creches in my own area that are in community centres and so on, who have to deal with so many different agencies and look after everything themselves. But the bigger picture in the budget is, because there probably will be some supports, but we have the highest childcare costs in Europe. It's about 28% of people's income. We invest 0.2% of GDP compared to 0.8%. In other countries such as Sweden is 1.6. And the reality is we need a public childcare system. I don't see why preschool should be any different to primary or secondary or third level, actually.
You're saying completely public, completely free.
I think there's loads of existing private providers who are brilliant, but we also have a really for-profit system that we've seen highlighted on RTE. And I think that we need to invest 2.5 to 3 billion to create about 55,000 jobs. And childcare workers, by the way, are the unhappiest in all of the trade union surveys
O'Brien,
that have been done.
An awful lot of parents around the country who leave their children sometimes for 6-7 hours a day in creches find it very expensive and very stressful. They'd be happy with that suggestion. Would you go along with it?
Well, look, I think it's about resourcing the sector. I think there's a number of issues. I was one of those parents, like, you know, and there's loads of them. If you look at the one of the big issues has been the increase in childcare costs over the last couple of years. You've seen the Irish Independent reporting today. It's up €10 a week in 2 years. But one of the things we're trying to focus on in this budget, and I understand what Francis is saying about a single agency, but is looking to resource the kids that really need it. I'm talking about special needs kids. You look at occupational therapy. Early intervention was mentioned by Peeler. Early intervention doesn't really exist in most areas. We've got kids who are waiting for specialist treatment to help them move along the path in their education and at a preschool level, who in my area in Dublin can be waiting 2-3 years for that type of intervention, when it's so important that you help kids at an early stage to be able to maximise their potential. There's loads needs to be done in the sector. I would say this, in fairness to Catherine Zappone, I think she and I say this as a member of the opposition, I think she's been a progressive minister, but not enough is being invested, I agree with Ruth on this, in the childcare sector at all. Like, do we actually see it?
Should it be free?
Actually, Barry education. Andrews was the minister who brought in the free preschool year in one of the toughest times. I mean, and that was a good start. Now there's a second year, but it's not enough. And what I'd like to see in the limited resources in this budget, because I think people are realistic about what's actually going to be available there, is what can we do with the limited funds? And what I would like to see prioritised is kids with special needs, first and foremost, to be able to help them and make sure we cut the waiting list and eliminate them for early intervention, because it's disgraceful that kids can't access those services.
So it can't be fully universal, Piers Doherty.
Well, look, I think Francis' suggestion in terms of a single childhood agency is with merit. It's what we're hearing from the sector. It's something that would be very much cost neutral, because what we've got is a disjointed way of dealing with childcare, which is putting more bureaucracy and red tape on the sector. What we're focused on this budget, Cormac, is about reducing the cost to parents, increasing the pay for those working within the sector and delivering quality within the sector. And that can't all be done in year one, but we can take the first step. So we have a 5-year transformation programme which would reduce costs by 2/3 for parents and would ensure that every employee would be brought up to the Mercer pay standards, which would be in year one above the living wage, and then increases afterwards. So that can be done with an injection of €85 million into the sector. What that means for somebody listening to here that has a child in childcare, it would mean €100 per child per month reduction. And that's what's needed, because let's look at international comparisons. We have got one of the highest childcare costs in the world. And despite what Catherine Zappone has been doing and what the government are saying that they're doing, we see childcare costs have increased again. Catherine Zappone released a statement last week just with the new statistics. Childcare costs have gone up by 3.6%. Again, it's €184 on average per week for a child in childcare. That is multiple
much
what it is.
Much cheaper outside of the capital, some say. It's almost half in Carlow. That's an example given during the week.
And even at those levels, that is still way above what the European averages are. We are a complete outlier in terms of childcare. This is one of the measures in terms of where we can really give workers and families a break by introducing.
You accept Dara's point,
commitment.
Though, that you have to target the resources we have. We don't have plentiful resources in this budget, so you can't go universal here.
Well, I'm just after explaining with the €85 million injection in year one, that would cost €27 million, because these changes kick in September in the childcare sector. But with €85 million in a full year, we can actually reduce the cost for all parents out there by €100 per child. There are different issues that Dara raised in terms of the additional supports to the sector, in terms of OTs and all the rest, which we have also identified the need, but that's separate to the cost of children.
Can I go back to Peter Burke, because I stopped you in full flight. What can we expect on Tuesday? Because you were the crowd in 2011, along with Labour, who said we'll streamline quangos and public agencies. We will cut the number down. That hasn't happened. And creches have to deal with seven different agencies. It doesn't make sense.
Well, I think it is absolutely certain there's been massive improvements in this sector, and there's been a 170% increase in the budget. And that goes in terms of, if you look at the basic metrics, in terms of childhood poverty is down consistently, it's reduced by 30%. We're awaiting the announcement for the next stats for this year. Over 105,000 children taken out of it. You've seen Minister Doherty has put it as a number one priority in our department. And also when you talk about universal subsidy, that's worth over €1,000 a year for families. And we also have a targeted scheme. Your home care credit has increased by 50%, up to €1,500, again targeted to ensure that we get the best out of our younger people and they get the best chance they can. And also, you can say in terms of working, paternity leave has been introduced and maternity leave has been expanded. All those areas to help improve working families. And you will see that trajectory continue and improve cost of living.
Paternity leave, though, and just to be said, people are talking about a free year. It's 3 hours a day.
I know
so
it is.
So if you're a parent who's working...
I have two children, I know.
You have to pay... Yeah, we all know. We've all children. Yeah. But my point is that you have to pay for the other 6 hours or whatever
parents,
it is.
Parents listen to this here. And really, you know, and there has been investment in childcare and Catherine's Abode, and we've seen that. But parents listen to this here are just... They're asking, are my creche fees going to reduce from on average €184 per week or not? And the problem is they're going in the wrong direction. They're increasing. We need proper state intervention. We need to redesign
which
the model.
Which is happening in November. There's a new scheme on, Brian. Yeah.
And it doesn't reduce the fees.
Okay, so I need to move on. Thank Francis Byrne of Early Childhood Ireland. I don't know if you've got the answer you want, but can I come to housing, which is, apart from childcare, that's a huge area of concern for an awful lot of people, an awful lot of families throughout the country, and an awful lot of them will be looking to Tuesday's budget, people who want to buy their family home, and say, look, will I get help here? Now, I detect a difference of opinion between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. Am I right, Dara O'Brien, before I come to our caller, in relation to help to buy, especially?
It has to be kept. It's the only affordability. Like, I believe in home ownership. My party does, and I believe it's an honest and aspiration that people can have and should have, and it should be supported. And the only affordability measure that has worked heretofore is actually the Help to Buy grant for first-time buyers. We believe it should be retained at the current level, unequivocally. And
kept as is, or do you agree with the Irish Institutional Property Lobby Group who say it should be expanded beyond residential?
No, I think I don't. I think what I'd like to see is an affordable purchase scheme that we negotiated last year and is slowly getting up and running to be implemented.
Beyond first-time buyers?
So in the interim, no, I think we've got to, I think
just
to be very honest,
buyers.
For first-time buyers, I want it kept as it is. It should be kept at 80% of first-time buyers have access to this grant. And one thing I would say in the context of, we are behind the EU average now on home ownership. 67%, the lowest rate in 50 years. And we've a fifth of our population are being consigned to a rip-off rental market. 21% of our population are there. So we need to help people to get on the housing ladder.
Peter Burke, Fianna Fáil says keep Help to Buy for first-time buyers. Is Fine Gael saying let's get rid of it or reduce it?
Well, obviously I'm not privy to the detailed budget negotiations, but I would be a fan of the scheme because obviously Michael Noonan brought it in. His key target was the supply of new homes, and that's why it was for first-time buyers, to ensure that it didn't have a negative effect in the marketplace and that it would stimulate new properties coming online.
You're also a fan of Pascal Donoghue, so what will he do on Tuesday, do you think?
I don't know. Obviously, I don't know what decision is going to be made, but I do think there is merit in the scheme, and it's a scheme that does give couples and first-time buyers a chance to get into property ladder in terms of deposits.
What's Fine Gael? Here's a simpler question. What's Fine Gael's stance on Help to Buy?
The Help to Buy, it's our policy at the moment. It's
supported
in a number of budgets. Noonan has brought it in a number of budgets. And we have extended it in the past.
The reason we put it front and centre, along with increased investment in social and public housing, I might add, this is just one aspect of it, is that it actually runs out this year. So we need to make provision for it next year.
We have another question on housing from David Holland just saying, but on Help to Buy, do you support or reduce?
No, there was a special housing committee. I don't know if people actually remember. We were all asked. I sat on it and I produced a document at the end. It wasn't supported on that committee to have a Help to Buy. The reason being, it just increases the price of housing when all housing is reliant on the private sector.
It doesn't show first-time buyers. The analysis
The key problem is affordability. And in my opinion, the only way that we can keep house prices affordable is by the public and the state intervening.
I agree.
And in the past, what we had was schemes whereby the council would build social and affordable housing. I bought a house myself under that scheme, affordable mortgages.
A scheme that Fianna Fáil brought in.
You keep interrupting, Darragh, but my point is that we've put forward on a number of councils plans where vacant council land will be used for that purpose, and actually it hasn't been supported by necessarily Fianna Fáil.
No, the state has to go
use its own land and
absolutely
keep housing
affordable. Fianna Fáil agrees.
One word on
the Help to Buy has cost us €206 million. The analysis done by the Parliamentary Budgetary Office Independent shows that a large number of people, over 40% of them, didn't need the Help to Buy to get their deposit. You're shaking your head. These are facts from an independent.
Sorry, I won't shake my head.
And it's typical of Fianna Fáil to produce a kind of scheme like this here, and when it's got time limited, to argue that it continues again, because that is exactly what McCreevy did, what Bertie did, and this is now what Fianna Fáil are doing.
You don't believe
the reality is
the reality has been
priced in. What we should have been doing with that $206 million is actually investing it into building houses, cost rental, cost affordable. That's what should be done.
Let me come to Gorbis. I think that his question or suggestion is of that ilk. David Hall, CEO of Irish Mortgage Holders, have you received the answer so far based on what you're hearing?
I think given the common denominator here is supply, and we have demand, we don't have supply. We have the biggest landowner in the state is the state, and we have the wherewithal within the approved housing body system and the local authorities to build homes and houses. And if you compare houses built by local authorities versus houses built today, you won't find the same challenges around pyrite and everything else that exists. So we have land, we have willing approved housing bodies who are proven capacity to build at large scale, are currently building. We have an Acoulon model in Ballymun, which was a small scale model, but nonetheless the land was given by Dublin City Council, and they've been able to build houses and sell them at an affordable level. So we need affordable homes, we need social houses. We have a despicable and shameful situation with so many people in emergency accommodation, especially 4,000 children, and the situation is only rising. And an imminent number of people losing their homes through repossessions with vulture funds and banks, and we need supply and replacement.
So can I just clarify before I bring this to the panel, David? Are you saying, when you say the state should build on state-owned land, are you saying that the state should hire contractors or contract the building out?
Both. At the moment, the approved housing bodies are showing they can build a quarter of all of the social housing homes that we built this year and next will be built by approved housing bodies, supported by the state. That's one mechanism which they can do it and have done so successfully and are currently doing. There's a number of thousand properties currently being built by approved housing bodies throughout the state. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. This is not brain surgery. This is something that's currently happening and has happened previously.
Okay.
But there seems to be reluctance to actually.
Peter Burke of Fine Gael, why isn't that happening at the rate David Hall wants it seen?
Well, first of all, we were coming from a very low base. We had 7-year period in this country where we should have built 200,000 houses and we did not build any. And demand kept increasing every year. So we are now trying to progressively rebalance a system that was broken. What Fianna Fáil did in the past was they outsourced the system through the Part 5 process to the private sector. And we had a recession. 2/3 of the construction industry fell apart. Jobs were lost. There was no capacity within our existing authorities to get back building houses. And now we're in a situation whereby 1 in 5 houses now being built is for the social sector. And we're trying to improve that. So you're
should
going from a
more
system. That's what we're doing. We're progressively rebalancing a broken system.
My point is, should it not be more than 1 in 5 given the crisis?
Yes,
that
that's what we're trying to do. But to start the engine of a home building, it takes time. When you had a period whereby you had a reduction of 96% over a 5-year period in terms of output of housing, and to get that system back again, it takes time, unfortunately. And that's a big frustration of government.
I'll come to you in just a second, Darragh, but we've heard this time and again from the government side, and they say, look, we are doing this stuff, but it takes a while for it to crank
up. It doesn't take 10 years, right? I mean, the crash
was
10 years
ago. There's been no money for the 10 years. That's unfair to say back in 2011 when we had a deficit of 22 billion. There was no money there.
What we have is an ideological opposition to public house building as existed in the past. It's ideological on the part of Fine Gael and also Fianna Fáil.
It's not, actually.
The reason being that, as was said by David, the biggest land hoarder in the state now is the state itself. There's enough public land there to resolve the housing crisis. And in terms of resources, we have massive resources. Particularly, there is no excuse now. I don't think there was an excuse a number of years ago either. But there is no ideological willingness to invest the huge wealth that we have in this society into energy saving, you know, houses that would actually play a huge role in people's health and well-being and save them travel costs and so on. It's just not happening.
But what do you say to people who say, I wouldn't trust the state to build houses? Look what they've done to the hospital and how the costs spiral there. Incentivise private to develop houses in such a way that it's profitable, but that you recoup tax as well, and then profits don't go out of kilter altogether. But keep the state out of it. They can't do it.
This is what the councils keep saying, and the government as well, that, oh, we don't have the capacity to do it. Now, immediately, there isn't. There is a shortage of apprentices. There is a shortage of skilled labour. That would be a difficulty, but I think people would soon return home if the jobs were there. But initially, they could get a developer to do it. We saw Widow Coolon. It is the example. Okay. It's only so 2 years ago.
Ideological with you and Finnegan.
Just no, it's roots wrong. Okay, and bottom line is, I agree with David, and I've been calling for this consistently since I took over the portfolio for my own party.
But you're selling off public land to private developers.
Excuse me,
Ruth.
I was at the housing meeting with the Land Development Agency earlier in the week, and we don't agree with selling off land to private developers. What I've negotiated last year, $310 million, to establish an affordable purchase scheme, to actually start to roll out cost rental. David Hall is right when he says that we have about enough zoned and serviced state-owned land to provide about 140,000 homes. And that work has been done by Lorcan Sir and Mel Reynolds, Orla Hegarty and others. It's there. The state does need to intervene. The state needs to lead by example in building. And yes, it can work with the private sector, but it should work itself. Because where Peter is wrong is, even in the worst years, between 2008 and 2011, we were building on average about 5,000 social homes in that period of time. That dropped off a cliff from 2011 to 2016. That's the problem.
Pierce Doherty of Sinn Féin, this is not a money problem, is it?
It is a money problem. It's a money problem, it's a political will problem, it's an ideological problem, and then there's also issues in terms of taxation that need to be dealt with as well. So, for example, there is land hoarding going on. We need to increase the vacant site levy. We've argued for that in our alternative budget. Unfortunately, we don't get support from that. Let's see how it will pan out this year. But we need to look at the scale of the crisis. Like, you just need to, and it's not just in the homeless figures of over 10,000. It's not just in the high cost of rent that people are paying on average 2,000 in the city here and large increases elsewhere. It's people who can't afford to get onto the property ladder. It's the lack of supply. And when that happens, the government has to intervene. Now, Dara's right in relation to a lot of what he says. The reality is he signs off on this budget and he signs off on a budget that
mandate,
he
Pierce.
signed off on a budget which you claimed last year, which was a housing budget that your fingerprints were all over it. Let's look at the statistics. Rents have gone up to crazy figures. Homelessness has increased, and house prices
have increased. Paul McNee, writing in the Irish Independent during the week, said, in terms of state intervention, can be a dangerous thing, he says. In terms of rent, it has caused landlords to exit the market, private sector supply to reduce, and rents to increase.
Well, we're arguing for a rent freeze, so there would be no increase in rents as a result of that. That rent freeze would last for 3 years. During those 3 years, we argue to reintroduce a tax relief, which was available in the 80s, only phased out actually recently, which would give renters 1 month back through the exchequer. But during that period, and this is the crucial thing because it's three legs of the stool, is that we would ramp up the capital investment that's required by 1.1 billion euro, putting enough resources there to deliver double what the government's targets are, an additional 8,700. So many people have talked about the Quillen model. You have to fund that. Okay. We want 4,000 affordable homes. That means putting the resources there.
Okay.
Listen, it's difficult for
people.
I'll tell you one thing, an awful lot of people
have an awful lot of suggestions. They really want Ireland to be a better place to live. Sure. We'll be back with health and wealth tax and climate in just a second. But let me read some of the suggestions from people texting 51551. William in County Clare says, free or very low cost public transport would have multiple benefits. Cleaner air, fewer traffic jams, lower carbon emissions, and also more social justice as people on low incomes can travel. A texter says, if pensioners don't get an increase in their pensions on Tuesday, Fine Gael will rue the day, says M. A threat from M. A texter, all schools should be required to operate an early drop-off from and late pick-up service operating from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. every school day. That could be done using existing facilities, so minimal state investment, but free up thousands annually for working parents who currently have to pay for that service. One more, maybe. Sean in Meath says, Cormac, could you ask Dara, has Fianna Fáil published their alternative budget, or could they even be bothered to put one together. After 10 years in opposition, I don't think they've ever come up with an actual policy.
What we actually do is we input into the budget. And it's difficult to listen to Pearce when they actually have the only finance minister on this island who's never delivered a budget in Martin O'Mullor, where they have the finance ministry in the north and they walked away from it.
Okay,
we input
that's a no for Fianna Fáil.
Okay, we input into the budget, unlike you. We actually input into
the role and we see the impact. Let's listen, this is a question for that, unfortunately.
As we go, you don't have a housing policy as well, Fianna Fáil.
You
don't. It's not published. Where is it? Where can we find it?
Peterborough.
We've published 12 bills this year alone.
You have no housing document or no housing policy. So you should put it before the Oireachtas if you have it.
We actually have numerous housing documents and numerous bills
which we've
input.
You have no housing policy, Dara.
What's the name? Peterborough, here's one back at you from Ronan Hurley. Very quickly from County Tipperary. He says, we have the Brexit deadline on the 31st of October. Why not simply delay the budget until after then?
Because what we need to do is act now and make preparations now. There are vulnerable, viable businesses that need money assigned to them urgently. And that's what the budget is going to be about. To
delay
ensure
it by
that
a few weeks, he says.
We can't do that. No, we have to, because one must remember too, when a budget was delayed in this country and the European Commission and others looked at it and gave it a sign-off before the Irish people, people weren't very happy then. Okay. So this budget is staggered in this process.
All right, we'll be back with more solutions from the public and listeners and movers and shakers in just a second.
Email saturday at rte.ie. Saturday with Cormac O'Hara on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back to the programme. 51551 if you want to put your solutions to make Ireland a better place, to make Ireland great again. If you want your solutions, suggestions for the budget 2020, the budget will be announced next Tuesday. Put them to our politicians, Peter Burke of Fine Gael, Dara O'Brien of Fianna Fáil, Ruth Coppinger of Solidarity and Pearce Doherty of Sinn Féin. We have now another caller, Dr. Matthew O'Toole, who's the GP and President of the National Association of General Practitioners, previously was President of NAGP. What's your suggestion, Matt?
Yeah, so my suggestion is a very simple one. It's for funding to allow GPs refer public patients for private radiology scans, so MRIs and CTs. So just to put this into context, at the moment in Ireland, GPs actually can't order CT scans or MRIs for public patients. They can only be ordered by hospital consultants. So that means is that basically if I have a public patient who, for example, needs an MRI of their hip, they firstly have to be referred to a consultant in a public hospital. They have to wait generally years to see that consultant who then books the MRI scan. So first they have to wait on a waiting to see the consultant, and then the consultant books the scan, and they wait on a second waiting list for that MRI scan. In the case of a patient then who then has private health insurance, I as a GP can order an MRI scan or a CT privately and generally get it within days. So providing funding for GPs to allow direct access for private radiology for public patients would actually save the state a lot of money and reduce waiting lists, because it means we could directly refer for scans. So just to put figures on this very briefly, mm-hmm. A patient with private health insurance who needs an MRI or CT would generally wait on average 6 days. And they'll get that MRI scan for a cost of about €225. A public patient without health insurance will firstly have to be referred to a public consultant in a public hospital, which will take 6 to 12 months. That consultation in a public hospital costs about €130. They then wait on a second waiting list for an MRI, which the cost of which in a public hospital is about €300. And they then have to wait on a third waiting list to see that public consultant again to get the result of that MRI. So in total, the cost of that episode for a private patient is €225 with a wait of 6 days. For the public patient, it's a cost of €560, which is two consultations and one MRI and a wait of up to 2 years.
That sounds absolutely bonkers.
It is nothing short of completely insane.
So your suggestion is allow GPs to get access to private diagnostics, basically. Is it a runner, Pearce Doherty?
It's absolutely a runner. I was actually just talking to a consultant which is practising in England about this and talking about the inefficiencies in health system and how we can change them. And this is one of the areas that they pointed out to. In Britain, in the north, for example, this is what happens. You refer somebody to them. You don't clog up the system. It's cost efficient. But also it's about making sure that waiting lists are reduced as well, because you're not on that list and the consultant isn't doing something that the GP has already done. It goes back to the type of kind of what type of health system do we want, and we need to put far more emphasis on primary care. This is a very, very clear solution. The department won't cost the solution, but it's something that could be done for very little money. Indeed, actually, it would actually save the health service a lot of money.
Peter,
it's just a good example. We talk about big budgets in the health system. This is some of the stuff that eats up that budget.
This seems like a simple solution that would save time and save an awful lot of money.
Yeah, it seems a very strong argument put forward. I'm not sure in terms of the workability of it, but it does seem, I wouldn't have any issue with it myself.
Yeah. Well, I think in terms of the
new GP contract that has just been agreed, I think it's something that we need to look at in terms of the reform measures in that. And it's worth pointing out that there's 210 million allocated over the next 4 years for it. We'll see a 10% income increase in the rural practice allowance. You'll see 80 million targeted for management of chronic diseases like diabetes and COPD, which will affect 400,000 patients. So there's big improvements in our GP sector, and this can be looked at in terms of the reform package against that.
Is there a risk, I wonder, Dara O'Brien, with this, if a GP can refer to a private situation, a private test, private diagnostics, that the supplier of that diagnosis will say, OK, this is coming from the public system, plenty of money there, let's increase the fee?
I don't think so. I think, look, what Matthew has said is eminently sensible. I've actually had experience in my own family of that very of this very situation, whereby, and you're actually creating additional work for consultants and additional work in the system by following the process as it is now. I've actually a question for Matthew. I'm wondering, like, through the GPs themselves, like, is this something that has been agreed that they would take on, and have they actually raised this directly with the Department of Health? Because this would certainly speed up delivery, particularly around CT scans and MRIs.
Can I also just make a point for Matthew to clarify? It's also about GPs referring to the public system.
Yes, yeah.
Not they can refer to the private system at the minute. It's to the public system, so that you cut out the red tape within system itself.
Yeah.
Matthew, do you want to clarify that?
Yes, I suppose, I mean, I've raised this issue multiple times with both the Department of Health and actually the National Treatment Purchase Fund, so that the NTPF at the moment pays for public patients to access private beds and hospitals. But I think a very useful departure would be for the NTPF to buy radiology as well.
Yeah.
And I suppose ideally in an ideal world, we would have access to public radiology. The problem is that the public system is completely collapsing, and actually private radiology can deliver this actually at a cheaper cost than what the public service is delivering at the moment.
Matthew, you are talking about GPs in the public system referring to the private system.
Yeah, and again, as I said, I mean, the reason why that is the current solution that I see at the moment is because the public system is essentially collapsing, and there is no capacity whatsoever within the public radiology service at the moment.
Even as a temporary measure, would you be on for that, Ruth Coppinger?
I have absolutely no problem with that. It's cutting out a layer of bureaucracy that doesn't need to exist. But I think the key problem is that we've a two-tier health system, and this is it exemplified. Now, apparently, the government say that they're committed to abolishing that system. Sláinte was meant to be about that. There's absolutely no sign of any interest in having a national health service, which is what we need, whereby these anomalies and discrimination, that if you have money, you can buy health. I mean, it's absolutely...
But that's what, if you support Matthew's suggestion, that's what you're supporting as well, a two-tier system, surely.
Because no, I'm saying that a GP should be able to refer somebody for a scan, that they shouldn't have to wait to go through a consultant.
Refer somebody to the private sector. So the public sector remains inefficient and overloaded. Well, you can do it quickly.
It's got to be about patient
care. The key problem here is we need to reinvest back into the public health system. This is the key issue. You have a situation whereby even during the recession, anything from 2 to 4 billion was taken out of the system. And we've seen in terms of nurses, public, you know, health workers who are paying the price for that in terms of wage cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to reinvest now massively. I mean, a 2% tax on the top 5% would pay for the health system that we
need. The one good thing about Sláinte Care is that every party pretty much signed up to it. And it is a roadmap there that should transcend government to actually move towards one system. It's in the interim what Matthew is saying is how we can actually improve patient care. And if that means utilising the private sector there as well, trial, yes. But one thing we haven't discussed is investing in GPs and in GP practice. Like, that's a big issue.
We've swathes of the country that
are losing GPs, that people can't access their GPs.
There's an increase from 2020, 10% into the rural practice allowance. Obviously, in urban areas as well as for the private areas, there's a 2 million fund going to be ring-fenced as well from 2020. So there is money put behind our GP network. And we have obviously our primary care network being approved as well.
You have to admit, Peter Burke, that there are delays now. I was listening to a GP on Radio on the Gaeltacht driving up this morning, and he was saying there was a time when you could call in, have an appointment the same day.
Yeah.
Now you're waiting sometimes a week.
The issue there is there's 3% more increase in traffic going through our health services this year. And that's a huge amount in terms of demographic changes. People are living longer. We have better expectations.
People are living longer.
It's demographic.
People's faults for living longer.
I'm not saying it. That's because of the great improvements that are in our health system that we have people living longer.
There's no point the government and Fianna Fáil talking about Sláintecare and everybody signed up to Sláintecare and whippity-doo, isn't this great? The reality is that neither Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil, who support the budgets, have actually funded Sláintecare. What we need to do if we're to take the first step is an additional €800 million into health. Now, we've provided for that in our budget. It's about reducing the costs on families and workers. It's, for example, giving everybody access to two free GP visits, but it's also about ensuring that there's investment in primary care, for example, increasing the intake of GPs, directly employing up to 100 GPs for areas that are under pressure and can't get those GP places, but also transforming the system. Something you can't do in 1 year, but we can take the necessary steps. And some of the things I'm just after talking about, right across the border from me in Strabane or in Derry, this is what people just take for granted. You go to your GP, it's free. You know, there are challenges there in terms of waiting lists and all that, and that's why we need to further invest.
It mightn't be as easy to cross the border soon, depending on what happens. Anyway, Dr. Matthew O'Toole, thank you very much indeed, GP, for that suggestion. Anne and Bray says the HSE can't afford to staff scanners even 5 days a week, lease a fraction of scanners downtime to private providers, ring fence income to increase public hours, carefully drawn contracts would allow public access for emergency use, she says, which seems pretty smart. Adrian in Dublin says, as a nursing manager supervising a Dublin hospital, I can tell you that we are choked with patients admitted and waiting for diagnostics. That could be organised and resolved at GP level, he says. Can I come to a suggestion we have on Twitter from Patrick? He says, tax the rich more and use the money to reduce the tax on those earning under €60,000. You have a wealth tax, don't you, Piers Doherty, in your alternative budget?
Yeah, we've produced legislation on the wealth tax back as far as 2011, and we've proposed a wealth tax based on some of the work that was done by the ESRI in their papers in 2016 and again in 2018. So our wealth tax is very clear. It's a 1% rate. It's 1% tax on wealth above €1 million. It's based on the family income and the household income. It excludes farms, it excludes businesses, it excludes pensions, and this is one of the models that the ESRI used.
But you're talking about the top 0.25 in terms of wealth in the country.
The ESRI are the ones who've kind of costed this. The Department of Finance won't cost it. So they've looked at six different models of wealth tax. We've provided the costing, which the one that's closest to us, although the ESRI's model is far more generous than what we would have. For example, my family, because I have four children, we wouldn't be taxed under the ESRI's model unless we had a wealth of something like €4 million. So only that above. Ours is different. It would be wealth above €1 million.
But that would
bring in 82 million, and it would affect, under their analysis, it would affect the 4,000 households in the state.
Okay, and you could help people earning under 60,000, as Patrick says. Is that enough in your book, Ruth Cominger, to focus on people on the top 0.25%, given the fact that we learned this week that we're fifth place in the league in terms of countries with the most amount of billionaires?
Yeah, the ultra high net worth individuals in this country now, that's people with over 30 million. Are now, there's 1,000 of those, and there's been a huge increase in millionaires. Apparently we'll have 100,000 by the next 5 years. I think the key, there's personal wealth, and we would support what Pierce has said, but I think you need to go much further. So I was mentioning there a 2% tax on anything above €1 million on the top 5% of households
and
would bring in.
Not the price of your home, for example.
No, that's actually anything over €1 million. Just to give an example of the type of wealth that exists that would bring in $3.25 billion. But as well as that, I mean, there's the option of financial transaction tax, which it isn't even socialist or revolutionary. Even the EU has called for something like a 0.1% financial transaction tax that would bring in $600 million. For example, that would pay for free public transport. Just in one fell swoop if you decided to do that.
Okay,
but this corporation tax, it has to be said, it isn't just about personal wealth.
Well, by God, is there a corporation tax? And we'll come to that in just a second before we finish. But on a wealth tax, we have, I think we have a clear division here in terms of tax, 1% on income over a million or 2% over a million. We have a clear definition from the left. What about Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil? The uber rich now. Dara O'Brien of Fianna Fáil.
Fine Gael an answer for themselves. I actually look, there's merit in what Pearce and Ruth are saying. It depends. What you need to look at is what consequences that has and what unintended consequences that.
That sounds like a no to me.
No, it's not actually. I mean,
we're days out from the budget. You would have researched this.
Well,
and
what
come
I'm actually
to
trying
conclusion.
To be is a little bit realistic about what will happen next week. The budget hasn't been agreed. Okay, well, we have certain priorities that we've put forward around housing, health, social welfare and investment in public services. Mm-hmm. Then you've got to figure out, well, how do you pay it? The one thing that Fianna Fáil have been able to do over the last 3-4 budgets, it's tried to make the tax system more progressive.
Well, let's previous budgets on this, were regressive. On this singular issue, don't talk in generality.
No, I'm not talking
on a wealth tax. People whose income exceeds 1 million euro, do you think they should have a special tax of their own on that income?
Yeah, I think, there's no point in me speaking personally. I see merit in that.
Yeah, what's Fianna Fáil's position?
I actually do. Well, what our position right now is to try to agree a budget next week.
No, on this single issue.
Sorry. On this, I'm not involved in the discussions.
Well, you know your party's position.
Sorry,
excuse
me.
On a wealth tax.
You've been a little bit now.
I'm not. I'm pushing you a little bit because I'm not getting any answer.
I tell you why. Because we're actually in dealing with reality of trying to agree a budget that's next Tuesday, okay?
And
trying to agree a tax
Pearce
and spend
and
policy.
Ruth Coppinger, and they give me a single word answer, yes, there should be a wealth tax.
Look,
you give me
I don't see a wealth tax coming in this budget, but I'm not the Minister for Finance.
Look at Peter Burke's answer now. Wait, he'll give you an absolute clear-cut answer. Should there be a wealth tax, Peter Burke?
No, and the reasons for it is, first of all, 8% of the taxpayers in this country pay 53% of the income tax budget. And I would refer people to the CNAG report last year, page 224, where he did an examination of high net worth individuals that we are discussing, and the effective tax rate that emanated from that was 39%. So you have to make a call, essentially. If you have high net worth individuals paying an average effective tax rate of 39% on their earnings, how high more can you do to jeopardise?
You're saying they're paying enough?
50 or
correct.
60?
If you charge people 60% tax for investing in this country, you're going to lose investment in the country. And I do be absolutely amazed by one argument by Ruth in terms of corporation tax. People think that if you increase corporation tax, the budget will increase. It won't, because it has two consequences.
Sure, that's what Pascal Donohue was saying.
No, if you increase the rate.
I want to finish my point.
We have a landslide of corporation tax, which wasn't expected. Spending is going up.
If you increase the rate of corporation tax, the first consequence will be that there's less available income to be taxed income tax vis-a-vis directors, employees. Secondly, the share price of companies depresses, which means there's less tax to be taxed at the higher rate of capital gains tax. So it has a twofold effect on the other side of the equation.
It's very interesting the way very wealthy people and very profitable corporations are completely persona non grata as far as Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are concerned. They just can't be touched. It's much, much easier to go for the likes of a carbon tax, which I'm sure we'll be talking about, which is regressive and will hit people on lower incomes. We have a situation where Social Justice Ireland say only 79 multinationals or corporations paid more than 10% corporation tax. The 12.5% is an absolute joke.
And there's a reason for
well recognised.
We haven't heard
in
from Pearce Darby.
In case you try a red scare, I'm unapologetic about agreeing with increasing corporation tax in this country to pay for health,
I'll cut the mics if we don't calm it down a little bit. I know you're passionate about the country in every single way, but Pearce Darby.
Yeah, look, it's no surprise that if Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil aren't willing to look at a wealth tax at the very, very top of Irish society. Actually, the OECD produced an interesting report just this week, which shows that during the recovery, the 50% lowest incomes in the state actually seen their incomes fall, while the 50% richest in the incomes in the state actually seen their incomes rise. And the lowest, the biggest hit was for the poorest, and the biggest rise for the was for the richest. And that's very clear. Okay. But it's not for. Let's be clear in terms of corporation tax. It's the OECD. It's not us. It's the OECD that produced this. In relation to corporation tax, we're not arguing for an increase in corporation tax rate. But what we are strongly arguing for is to close down the loopholes. Now, the two parties to my right here, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, for example, they don't want to tax the banks. They don't want. They want to allow our banks
there's
to continue to pay no
euro
tax.
Let me
just finish. In Britain, there is a levy, right? Just like ours. In Britain, they pay corporation tax higher than ours, but they've introduced an 8% surcharge on banks. We're, and the third thing they have done is they are not allowing the banks to carry forward their
small,
losses. So we would bring in 100. We would bring in 170 million euro.
Look, they say they're taxing the banks and so on. There is a levy. Texter John Kilcullen and Lucan says we had a wealth tax many years ago. It was so complex to determine what people's wealth actually was that the accountancy fees were often a multiple of the tax due, and an awful lot of tax on a lot of solutions and so on. I'll go to a break. You'll get your spake in just a second on climate change.
Email saturday at rte.ie. Saturday with Cormac O'Hara on RTE Radio 1.
You're welcome back to the programme. Now, can I welcome a young climate change activist and an upcoming member of the Youth Parliament on Climate. Beth Doherty, what's your solution, what's your suggestion for Budget 2020?
I mean, before I start, I'd like to just say that I am not an economist. I'm definitely not a scientist. You know, I'm 16. But what we want is we want the government to listen to the science. And the science is saying we need to get to carbon neutrality by 2030. And the way that we need to do that is that this budget needs to prioritise renewable energy. It needs to prioritise renewable energy over fossil fuels. You know, we depended on fossil fuels for 90% of our energy in 2017, and that isn't okay. So in this budget, the government needs to increase funding for renewable energy. It needs to increase funding for, you know, renewable public transport, and it needs to focus on tackling corporations. Because as we know, you know, corporations are causing the majority of our emissions, and we need to target that rather than on an individual level, because that is the way we ensure climate justice and that is the way we ensure structural change.
Okay, let me put that to the panel. I'll start with Ruth Coppinger. There's nothing wrong with that, but some people would say if you focus completely on renewables, it might threaten the economy as we know it and economic growth in some way.
Well, I'm really pleased at the three things that Beth highlighted there, because obviously we have to get away from fossil fuels. Everybody agrees with that, which does require investment to help people to make that shift. I'm glad she also mentioned public transport, because that's 20% of the cause of carbon emissions. And yet the government hasn't even considered yet the idea of free public transport, which has been done in about 100 cities now and in Luxembourg as well. And it's something that you could do quite quickly if you're willing to invest the money.
But do you think the economy could be run completely on renewable energy?
Well, obviously it would take a period of time to make that transition. But the point is that they haven't invested. And we would advocate at least 500 million would have to be invested in this budget. That's probably not even going there. Also, to mention corporations, interesting, because there is a debate going on in the whole climate change community, if you like, among young people who are getting involved in this issue for the first time. And just simply targeting individuals in terms of a carbon tax, which is the only thing in the government's arsenal. Like, they haven't mentioned anything else in terms of this budget. You'd have to go at least four or five times higher. And actually, it wouldn't really offset the carbon emissions that we want to offset.
Okay, on this one, on renewables, the Taoiseach did make a major announcement. That's what the government was calling it in New York at the UN in terms of fossil fuels and so on. But what about investing far more in renewables and renewable energy in this budget, Peter?
Yeah, well, we have a climate action plan. It has 180 recommendations to get to 70% by 2030. I know Beth, and I commend her for her work, that she's saying we want to get to 100%. But the problem at the moment is a renewable sector gives anywhere between 4 and 60% of our energy per day. So it's uncertain and it does need investment. But you have to change behaviour as well. And one thing that amazes me when you see the left, like Pierce, in terms of you have 27 Nobel Peace Prize winners coming forward in science saying that you need a carbon tax to change behaviour. And you also need to ring fence that money to improve our infrastructure, that people have a clear choice. But you have to have a carrot and stick approach.
You're saying we have to increase the carbon tax. That'll happen in the budget, is that right?
I assume so. And that's the narrative
Sinn Féin,
we're following.
You're pointing out the Sinn Féin...
Because you have a climate change committee in the Oireachtas, which has agreed this.
Okay, so you're pointing out the Sinn Féin says in their alternative budget that was published during the week, no increase in carbon taxes.
And what Peter failed to mention is we have a carbon tax. It brings in 400 million euro per year. It doesn't change behavioural change. Taxes can change behavioural change.
Because the infrastructure wasn't there to manage it.
I haven't interrupted you one time during this debate. Taxes can change behavioural changes when the alternatives are there. So what we really need to do, and I'm on the same page and Beth in this here, is we need to invest significantly in renewables. We need to invest in alternatives. We need to invest in ways where public transport, and that's why we're putting forward a serious plan to increase the amount of public transport, increasing the PSO levy, giving capital investment, making additional grants there in terms of solar energy, and crucially making public transport free for everybody under the age
we're
of 18.
Far from 100% reliance on renewables. Where is the backup? Is it fossil? Is it nuclear?
No, I would be completely opposed to nuclear, to be honest with you. But like, as an island, we need a transition period. Well, Beth is right. Look, climate and our action against climate change has got to be central in everything we do. Now, there is a transition period required, and you do need investment. I'd agree with Ruth on the whole area of public transport. We've had the last 8-9 years, if we look at where public transport has come on, it's at a standstill. If you talk to people in the commuter belt, you look at our train services, our buses, even our fleets, that we haven't changed our bus fleets. It's only happening now. We need to expedite that, and we're not going to meet our 2020 targets. And unless there's radical change, we won't meet 2030 either. And we need to do that.
Like the micro generation bill that we have that Fine Gael won't support doesn't cost the state a penny, but allows people to generate.
You have the final word, apart from our listener who says Ireland has paid over 4 billion euros in carbon taxes since it was introduced in 2010, but no one knows where it's gone. But hopefully we'll get some clarity on Tuesday. Thank you very much indeed to our panel, Peter Burke, Dara O'Brien, Ruth Coppinger and Pierce Doherty. Until next Saturday, more solutions, I hope. Bye-bye.
Saturday with Cormac O'Hara was produced by Tom Donnelly. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan. Research was by A.B. Filmon Bowman, and on sound was Jamie Doyle.